This is a FUBAR Radio podcast. For more information, go to FUBARradio.com.
Nick Helm and Nathaniel Metcalf's fan club on FUBAR Radio.
Hello, listeners. Does that work? Does that speak, Kaylee?
Yes, I think so.
Oh, what was that? Was that you? We're on the radio. You don't hear that, do you? That's Natalie and Theo shouting, "We're on." This is Nick Helm and Nathaniel Metcalf's fan club. But as you can tell already from the professional opening, Nick Helm isn't with us today. Hang on, is there a... No, that's applause. I was going to see if we had one that was going, ah, oh, but we don't. We don't have a sound. But we've got this one. We've got... But that was... Hang on. It's a long... Yeah.
This seems a bit excessive.
It is excessive, but that suggests that we're pleased that Nick isn't here.
Yeah, are you?
No.
Are you?
No. Oh, I'll tell you what we've got. Hang on. All right. Okay, press it to stop it, yeah. we got this one. So Nick Helm isn't here today.
It sounds sexy.
I thought that was like a boo. That's like a sexy boo. Oh,
your little face, though, now that you have access to the buttons.
I know, I'm very excited.
How are you ever going to come back to this chair?
I know. Well, this is it. Well, so what's happening, right? This is Nick Helm and Nathaniel Metcalf's fan club. Nick Helm isn't here because he's had a panic. He's had a panic that he needs to do more rehearsals for I Think You Stink, but book tickets. I'm sure that he's not here, so that means the show will probably be much better for him having not been here. So I'm here, not by myself. I'll play myself. I'm here with Hayley Campbell. Say hello, Hayley.
Hello.
And Hayley Campbell, you might remember, was fan club guest number two.
Yeah, number two. Number two. Was going to be number one, but I can't remember why. I think I said nope.
I think there was something like, are you busy or something?
I probably made something up, so I wasn't the first one to ruin your show.
Oh, right, you're worried.
Yeah.
Because initially, we were talking about you as being a regular host of...
That's right, and then you kicked me out of the band.
We did.
Ruthlessly.
Too many girls.
Too many girls. You need more white guys.
We do. That's what they say in this industry. More white guys, please. and we did. We achieved that. And we also achieved that with our booking policy in the main, right? Very much so. Very much so. Very white guy heavy on fan club. That's our motto.
That's fan club.
Yeah, that's fan club. More white guys. I'm having a coffee. Do you even know, Hayley Campbell, the first rule of fan club?
That you have to tell your friends about fan club.
Good. You do have to tell your friends. And do you know the second rule of fan club?
No. You have to tell your friends about fan club?
Basically, yeah. Please, for the love of God, tell your friends about fan club. Now, I have known Hayley Campbell sitting opposite me for 11 years.
Something like that, yeah.
And you're still a relatively young person, aren't you? So I knew you when you were teeny.
Yeah, I was early 20s when somehow you became my boss, although you insist
that's right.
I wasn't.
And again, I'm your boss today because I am sitting in the big chair.
You have the buttons.
I've got all the buttons like Nick Helm normally does. I've got all this. I've got access to this. I've got this one, my favourite. Actually, not that one. That's not my favourite. This is my favourite. Shotgun with cock. That's my favourite.
You used to mime that a lot when I was your employee.
What, shooting myself?
Mm-hmm.
Probably, yeah. That makes sense. Made a very good cup of tea, though. Hayley.
Yes, yeah.
Although you say that a lot, but I reckon I made you just as many cups of tea as
I reckon. So we used to work together in a comic book shop.
Yeah.
Which smelt of armpits and balls, but less so than most comic book shops.
Speaking of armpits and balls, how are you coping with the heat?
I have a sweaty ass right now. So yesterday it was frankly disgusting.
Well, I think, you know, in some ways, I think when you're a man, the worst thing, you tend to get quite sweaty balls a lot of the times.
Right, and it sticks to your thighs.
No, not even. It sort of sits around so your balls are essentially like two boiled eggs in a ramen. it's like that in a sort of soup, like a broth.
Did you see that picture on Twitter yesterday of a guy, he was on the train and he was on his laptop and he was wearing shorts and sandals and he had taken off his vest and he was hanging it from the little coat hook.
I saw that.
It was fucking disgusting. I felt so sick just looking at it. And I thought, like, I retweeted it, and I usually think there's, it's a bad scene if you're retweeting like covert pictures of people on public transport.
Oh, sure, because I think that is horrible.
I think that's
horrible.
But that man had no shame.
Absolutely,
and
not.
No one needed to see his tits, and they were all over the place, and he deserved all of the shaming he got on Twitter.
I like that he'd hung up his shirt as well, so, as if like there was something quite civilized about
it. Yeah, and I zoomed in on the vest because I was just wringing this out for all the disgusting details I could get out of it.
I imagine he was wringing it out. Yeah, well.
You could see the sweat stain on the blue vest. It was vile. Ugh. I don't know if we've tracked down that man yet. I hope he's seen it. I hope he's seen what he's done.
Well, I guess that's it, isn't it? There's a lack of shame, so he probably wouldn't mind. He'd go, what's wrong with that?
Yeah, we should bring back shame. That was one of the big...
That was one of our big things at Gush.
The campaign the motto, the
we
message.
We should just bring back more. People should be more ashamed of themselves.
No one was ashamed of themselves. There needed to be a healthy dose of shame, and we used to see men coming in all the time, no shame, absolutely shameless, buying the worst things.
Sure.
But then there were the people who had shame and would hide the terrible things between other things.
I don't mind that. I quite like that. I respect shame.
Yeah, but that was good. You went, good, good.
Yeah, I do.
But just blatantly handing me something terrible, please.
And you're from Australia, aren't you? You're from Brisbane, Australia.
Yeah. So I'm...
Brisbane. Why do they call it? Because they've got a casino. We've got one casino.
We've got one casino, but that arrived while I was growing up, so I don't know what we called it before.
Brisbane.
Brisbane. Yeah.
Yeah, they probably called it by its actual name.
Yeah. So it's hot there. So yesterday, the weather was stuff I'm used to, but this country is not built for it. You don't have any air conditioning. Even the railways, you can't go above 27 degrees.
They give up.
They literally buckle. So I'm supposed to be fine with it, and for the most part, I am. It's just... this country now.
That is the problem with the weather, I think. It's that no one here knows how to deal with it.
Nobody.
It's like everyone just freaks out.
And it may be because I come from the comic shop, mm-hmm. and I have experienced things, various traumas, but deodorant doesn't seem to be that big a deal in the UK.
Not a big deal in the UK.
No. And I think, one of the good things to come out of the comic shop is I think I ingested so much BO over the years that I think I've fried that ability in myself. I can no longer smell it. Like on public transport, people go, oh, it stinks of armpit. Really?
You've given up.
I've smelt so much of it. I think I've taken in my quota for my life.
We had Morgan McLean on last week, and she's got a cheese shop, and she says that she just doesn't know.
Does she smell of cheese?
No, she didn't. Okay. But I think she worries she does now. I think that's her thing. Like she goes, I probably just smell of cheese all the time. She didn't. But like I imagine, you can understand the worry.
Well, you would have been on this side of that.
I would have been that side of the room.
So you would have had a better go.
So if she had, yeah, I'd say, you know, if she had, I'd have said, yeah, you do smell of cheese. But she didn't. Didn't. Would I have said that?
If you had to smell of cheese, what kind would you like to smell of?
Well, I don't know, because that was that cheese shop that you accidentally walked past. Have you ever walked past that cheese shop in Covent Garden?
Neil's Yard.
Yeah, Neil's Yard.
Yeah.
I walked past that, okay. Like, that's one of my cut-throughs.
Mm-hmm.
So I go through that, right? I always forget it's there.
Always smells of Stilton.
Oh, is that what it is?
I think so.
I think because it always smells like you've got a kind of vomit.
Yeah.
It's like someone's basically ate some powdered parmesan and then vomited it. It's that kind of,
It's delicious.
So I, I was trying, because I'm quite fearful of lots of cheeses, but I had...
You're fearful of cheeses?
Well, lots of ones that I don't know what they are. What's that? I had some lovely cheeses last week. Loved them all.
Do you like a goat cheese?
That was nice, but everything
that's,
was...
That's the only cheese I'll step back from. It's disgusting.
Everything they said, she kept saying, this one was really strong, but when I had it, it wasn't strong in the least.
Did you feel like a hard man?
Yeah, I did. I felt like... I felt this is how other people feel when they play sports. That's how I felt. I felt like this is my eating cheese is my sport. I think I'm good at it.
Yeah.
And it wasn't okay. And this one's really strong. So they kept warning me because I was a bit worried about it. But I'd have every cheese and I go, it's not strong at all. Not strong at all. I had a strong cheddar.
Uh huh. Crumbly, sharp.
Well, they said that. They said, oh, it's a bit tangy, isn't it? It's like nothing. Like nothing to me. I could go stronger. I could go stronger.
So strong.
Hmm. So in Australia, it's hot.
It's hot.
But it's fine.
They plan for it. There are beaches. People drive around in their car. When it gets really, really hot, the air conditioning in all the shopping centres, because we have Westfields. They all die because it's just too hot and they can't deal with it anymore. So people drive around in their cars just endlessly so they can use the air conditioning.
Oh, that's nice. And do people have air conditioning in their houses?
Yes. We had it when I was a kid, but only, well, when I was an older teenager. For the couple of years before I left home, we had air conditioning. but only in one room of the house.
And is your air conditioning like those ones you get in American films where they stick them in the window?
No, I'm terrified of those in New York. They look like they're going to fall out the
window. And they do, don't they? And that's what often happens. They often fall out and kill people.
Yeah.
And they're like portable air conditioning devices that you hang on a window.
You see absolute idiots buying an air conditioner in New York and then just shoving it in the window. What are they holding it in with? Like blue tack and stuff? I don't know.
Well, to be honest, I mean, it's a big thing, isn't it? It's a big unit that might fall out. So it makes sense that must happen, must kill people all the time.
Yeah, I think they do.
So you...
So we had it in one room of my house, and then if it got really hot, we'd all sort of sleep in the lounge.
Oh, really?
Because it would break if we tried to air condition the whole house.
Yeah.
It just can't handle it.
We have fans over here, and fans are just things that don't really work.
I sat in front of one all day yesterday.
Yeah, you just need a massive one.
Yeah.
That's all you've got. It's not
Have you got one?
No.
You were thinking about wearing shorts yesterday.
I haven't worn shorts in 11 years. 12 years. I'm too self-conscious to wear shorts. I've got a pair of shorts, and on Wednesday evening, having found it was going to be 38 degrees, I tried them on just to see if I could get them around my waist. And happily, they did. I could do the zip-up. I could do my fly-up as well. And that was my other worry. And I've got them. Yeah, nailed it. Absolutely nailed it.
What colour are your knees? Have they ever seen the sun?
No. But they're like... you know, they look kind of reddish, I guess.
Uh-huh. Little schoolboys always have really red knees.
I think that's what mine are like, yeah. I've got my schoolboy knees. They're not like pure white. Mm-hmm. And they actually look quite... they're sort of like quite... I wouldn't say like big, but they're quite...
You've got big knees?
No, but like I've got sort of quite...
Swollen with arthritis.
Yeah, maybe that's it. Maybe that's it. Maybe I'm dying. Maybe it's like deep vein thrombosis or something. Do you get that?
Yeah.
No, they're quite... They look all right. But I only ever see them from that angle, looking down, you know. So I never really... I don't think they're that terrible. But I just think like I don't really like seeing knees.
No, even if you've got the loveliest knees in the world, I don't think anyone should be wearing shorts. There are reasons I left Australia, and shorts is one of them.
Of course. What kind of shorts do they wear?
They're called stubbies.
Stubbies?
Yeah.
What's a stubby look like?
They're always little blue short shorts that men wear.
Oh, yeah.
And they wear a Bonds singlet, which is sort of a Rab C. Nesbitt, except not the mesh thing. And that's blue and always faded and always has some sort of stains down the front.
Right, yeah. Because I think shorts are different in different countries, aren't they? Because, I think in the UK and Australia, the Commonwealth, maybe. Mm-hmm. Maybe it's something to do with the Queen. That you do tend to wear a short traditionally, right?
Yes. There are some shorts that I see around, like, on bodybuilders and things, and I think those are Austrian shorts.
And what's an Austrian short?
I think that's just pure racism. I have nothing to back that up at all. They're basically the little shorts I saw Arnold Schwarzenegger wear.
That's based on the thing, then?
Yeah, so it's based on a thing, and then I assume that they're still in the 70s.
So this is like a pumping iron era Arnold Schwarzenegger.
Yeah. And there's a bodybuilder I've seen around who wears, like, really tight leggings that are flared at the bottom. I don't even know where he would get them.
That seems quite disco.
Yeah.
Would that be appropriate?
Maybe.
A flared legging. I think I could pull off a flared legging.
I remember
flared
you,
at what point?
Flared like where jeans flare. I remember you had a pair of jeans that were kind of flared at the bottom.
Yeah.
Do you remember that time you came back from work? You came back to work after you bought a pair of jeans that were too tight for you, and you'd returned it, and you were pleased with yourself.
Oh yeah, I was. Because I went back to the shop and I said, "Can I return these jeans, please?" Because I misunderstood how big my ass was, and that was, I tried to think of an excuse, but then I thought, well, let's just say that. And they were delighted with that.
I remember the time you were picking up a box of comics and you split your jeans.
Oh, yeah,
but
yeah,
there
yeah.
was no waiting point between splitting the arse of your jeans and then you putting that box down and you headed out to just go to Oxford Street to buy new jeans.
There's
no time.
Absolutely.
There's no time.
It was just like, I'm going now.
I have to go. And then I have to go and fix the box of books he'd left in the middle of the floor. Although when I broke my jeans...
Broke them? You're suggesting that when you split jeans, it's something different. Yours just broke. They broke, did they? They didn't...
They were faulty
jeans.
Your
arse didn't come out of
them. My arse exploded out of the jeans. Do you remember I asked you... How bad is it? I showed you my arse, and it was so bad that I had to tie a cardigan around my waist. But I spent the rest of the day talking to everybody in the shop and thinking, do they know my whole arse is hanging out the back of my jeans?
Probably not.
And they
see,
didn't.
I think there's a bit of me, the bit of me, that the old me, whose arse came out the back of their jeans and then immediately left to buy some more jeans.
That guy now, taking care of business.
That guy I respect now. Because I remember late, I reckon within a year, probably let's say 6 months, when it happened again.
Which it always is.
Oh, yeah.
How many jeans have we gone through?
I don't know. Has my arse gone through more like? but loads. Countless. I've lost countless jeans to my arse.
Fallen soldiers.
Yes, fallen soldiers. I have a funeral for them. They're like, it's like Return of the Jedi. I set fire to them on a pyre and push them out into like a Viking funeral. But I'd say the next time that happened, my jeans went. I did what you did and went, oh, right, I'll just tie my jumper around my waist. And then I think...
This is just my life
then
now.
I think, like, one of my mates was like, it might have been Ozzy, came around and said, oh, do you want to go for a pint? And I went, sure. And so I even left with... Like, I went out with, like, my arse hanging out.
But, like, but it's it feels... Like, I felt exhilarated knowing that my whole arse was hanging out and no one could see it. And it was like my little secret.
Was it
that
like,
sounds perverted. I sound like a bit...
Well,
I
is it?
Disgusting.
Or is it... So was that more than this, like, it was cooler? You go, oh, it's quite nice, actually.
Yeah, it was breezy.
Mm. I often see women in summer dresses and think, that looks nice.
No, I'll tell you what, it's not, because your thighs rub together. So it's sort of a false economy of right. Of cooling down, because you're just creating more...
Static.
Yeah, heat. And,
energy.
Horrible. Yeah, it's horrible. You just get... It's more sweaty, I think, than wearing jeans.
Okay. We've been shown a picture of some jorts. Why are they called jorts? Are they jean shorts?
Jean shorts.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
That
science
makes sense.
Has spliced them, and this is what they've created.
I would say that's they're the kind of shorts that typically I'd imagine would be a big deal in Australia.
Yeah, often, well, they seem to be a big deal in Hackney. People have the shorts.
Is that an ironic
the pockets
thing
poking
now?
Out the bottom as well.
The pockets poking out the bottom?
Yeah, so they cut the jeans off, so they're... Short jean shorts, but leave the pockets, so the pockets are longer than the shorts.
I was watching William Friedkin's Sorcerer this week.
It's a good film.
And
that's a very sweaty film.
It's a good heatwave film. Yeah, like humid.
Yeah. Also, humid. I think the last time I saw that was in the cinema, and I was so tense that when I left, I felt like I'd had a massage or something, because mm-hmm. all of my muscles suddenly relaxed.
Oh, just, yeah, that makes sense. Oh, that's quite nice.
It was, yeah. It was a horrible 2 hours of my life, because you're just like, oh, my God.
Oh, yeah, what's going on?
But,
yeah.
Yeah, good
film. We got sent it free last week.
Really?
So we had a listener sent in a bunch of free stuff, including two Sorcerer posters signed by Friedkin.
Well, he was just at the Prince Charles Cinema, I think.
Who was he? Friedkin?
Yeah.
Oh, for To Live and Die in L.A.?
Yeah. Yeah. That's another film where there are good jeans.
Yeah.
William Peterson wears good jeans in that film.
I think Friedkin's really grown into himself. I think he's got a good old man face.
I think Brian...
And he's got that kind of voice that's quite good for old men as well, I think.
I think Brian De Palma's really grown into his ears.
Sure.
Do you like to look at pictures of Brian De Palma's ears?
Mm,
they stick out like wing sure. nuts, and they're gorgeous.
Okay. I don't know. Actually, to be honest, I've never really noticed his ears.
We went and watched that documentary, and the whole time I was looking at mostly at his ears.
Oh, right, yeah. That's what we do. Me and Campbell often go and see documentaries and things that are basically for very few people. We saw it at the BFI and...
Men in Anoraks.
Three so. People?
Yeah, that bit, the cinema in the BFI that seats...
Studio.
Yeah, it's the studio. It's the one right next to the bar, but it's between the bar and the box office. Yeah. It's just like, what are
it's
we going to do
box.
With this space?
Yeah.
It's a little box. How many does it seat? Like 20?
30.
Yeah, 30 at most.
You'd think they could sell it out, though, wouldn't you?
Yeah. And so we spent a Friday night seeing the De Palma documentary, and there was... who else was there? There was two people
on a
date.
There was a couple, wasn't there?
Yeah.
Yeah, a couple on a date, which seemed like an odd...
I thought, this is a misstep.
Mm.
And I think they left.
I think they might have left.
Because when the lights came up, it was just you and me.
Was there not another old lonely soldier there? Another cornflake? Was there not?
One of the guys we know.
Oh, sure.
One of our guys.
I mean, I've been that guy. I'm regularly him. But, you know,
I like to go to the BFI early so I can watch those guys come in. I'm like, here he is.
Sit at the back.
Yep.
Sit at the back. See who comes in. Perhaps a blue carrier.
Yeah. It's always a blue carrier bag.
Yeah. Like that with their shuffling in, strange-shaped people.
Like from the Jim Henson Creature Shop.
Jim Henson's Creature Shop, all sort of bent over. Or I do like it. But I do also worry. I go, this is just me in the future. This is just me. It's me now.
Have you ever gone to the BFI and not been able to figure out the crowd? You go, this just doesn't make any sense.
Oh, yeah. Like, I love to try and work out who's here.
Yeah.
I don't like it when it's tribey, though. I much prefer it when it's, like, totally, like, who are all these people?
I really love to walk down... who did we go and see? Old guy who died. Jason King.
Oh, Peter Wingard.
Yeah, walking down the South Bank that night on the way to the BFI, I was pointing at people.
You can just tell who's going.
You're going, I'm
going to
see you and you and you. It's like when I went to see the Sisters of Mercy at the Roundhouse, I walked all the way through Camden pointing at people I knew were going to be there. And I was with someone who was just pointing at goths. And I'm like, no, it's a very specific kind.
Oh, is it? I was going to say, because in Camden, that's like a needle in a haystack,
yeah,
isn't it?
That's why I felt special. It was like a special
because you've got some
anthropological
goth blood.
Thing. Yeah. And
sniff them out.
I could sense them, and they were wearing the T-shirts that they were wearing back in the 80s. Oh, it was very special.
But not Sisters of Mercy T-shirts.
No,
that'd be too easy,
you have
right?
to have adjacent T-shirts, but not the Sisters of Mercy T-shirt.
Sure. I think that's it. I think I was talking to my brother about that. Yeah, I tell you, my brother didn't see anything weird with people that wear T-shirts of the band to go and see the band.
No, you should kill yourself.
I think
that's
awful.
It's wrong. You should have shame.
Yeah, I think that's a shameful thing.
Especially if they're brand new.
I don't want anyone to know where I'm going. I always want to look the opposite of where I'm... I don't want anyone to think I'm part of their gang.
Yeah.
Exactly. That's the last thing. Because otherwise, like, you know, it's like encouraging a conversation with someone, isn't it? I don't want to do that. No. I want to avoid any conversation with anyone.
No, because then if the people think that you're one of them, you go, is this what I look like? You think I'm one of you? Do you think the cornflakes... Of the BFI.
We call the people cornflakes, who are the people who come in. the shambling. Let's say men.
But do you think they see you at the BFI and they're like, oh, I knew that guy would be here?
Maybe. Maybe they do. That's it, because that's what I want. Because I don't know that that's not how I look to them.
Because you don't have a blue carrier bag, but you will have the same one backpack for 10 years.
Oh, sure.
I was here for one changeover of the backpack. Because I've known for longer than a decade.
And I take a backpack everywhere. I won't not
everywhere.
Have it.
And I don't know what it's full of, but it is always
heavy.
Full.
Oh, it's heavy.
This is a comedian thing. Comedians always have a really heavy backpack, and I don't know, and a Casio digital watch.
They do, yeah.
That's a comedian starter
Checks
pack.
Out.
Matt's got one. But the backpack, the watch, if I see someone like that on a bus, I go, bet they're a comedian.
Probably, because there's probably, I think... You can ration out comedians, so there can be one on every bus now.
Yeah.
There's millions of them. Absolutely millions of them. Everyone's a comedian. So you do have quite, like you would say, you are quite gothy.
I would say.
I don't know. You're less gothy than lots of people, but you've got a bit of it in you, haven't you?
Yeah. I mean, the teenage pictures are embarrassing. The teenage photographs that I keep. Buried and may well burn.
Right. Okay.
I was a pat goth.
Oh, yeah.
My favourite kind.
Okay. And in Australia?
Yeah, in Australia. And I would... So everybody's complaining that it's hot, but come on. I used to wear ridiculous things in 40-degree heat.
Like, you know, what?
Fishnets and PVC in 40-degree heat. I wore a fishnet top.
There's never any need for a PVC.
No, it's disgusting. But I wore a fishnet top to a music festival and then got sunburned. And then the next day, I looked like a ham.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I was thinking, like, what's that? Like, isn't that one of the, like, a Connect Four looking thing?
Yeah.
You'd look a bit like that.
Yeah. So I just looked like a ham.
Okay.
Yeah.
But you quite like the sun now, don't you?
Yeah, it's great.
Someone.
It's great. I'm depressed.
Did you always
like
the sun?
I'm depressed in January and February. No one should live here in January and February.
No, but I think that's an Australian thing, right? But I don't know Australians that don't live in the UK that don't have seasonal affective disorder.
Yeah, we all just get sad. And the ones who have money just go back to Australia for 2 months. And then I see them all on Instagram and I hate them. Mm. But it, yeah, it's just, it's not right. I don't know how you live in the dark. I'm solar powered.
That makes sense. I quite like it. Oh, I never even finished my point, which is the fan club way. We never finish a point we're making. In Sorcerer,
it's very Billy Connolly. Come back to it.
Yeah, but we never come back to it. We've left that behind. That's gone. The thing in Sorcerer, I was watching, do you know there's that bit where they have to try and make the makeshift bomb?
Yep. Another tense moment.
Oh, yeah. And I love that bit where you actually have to outrun the bomb, but it's more like it is in real life, where it's like, you can't get like 5 feet away from a bomb. That will kill you.
Yep.
So he has to go a long way. And they do it by jerrying up this kind of sandbag that sort of slowly, they cut a bit of sand out of it, and so it's rising and rising. So
like
eventually,
sand through the hourglass.
So eventually it's going to drop a rock onto some, like a liquid, like explosive. So a rock's going to hit it.
Well, this explosive is very sensitive to movement. That's why they've got to drive the trucks so slowly and delicately.
Yeah.
So they're smashing this pool of liquid with a rock.
And yeah, and they're going to blow up a big bit. Why are they? Is it to get through something? They need to.
There was that big tree that had fallen.
That's
across
right, the big tree.
Thing.
So they need to basically explode a tree so they can get through it. And they're carrying very explosive bit of some sort of liquidy explosive thing.
It's like carrying a bowl of soup from the kitchen to the table, but sure. They've got to do it through the jungle on a truck.
Yes, exactly.
And if they don't do it right, they will die.
Yeah. So there's lots of people driving trucks through South America that if they kind of go a bit wobbly, they're going to blow up. That's basically the film. So it's like
it's that for 2 hours,
and then they have to go over like rickety bridges and like sweat and
bridges that are made of wood and rope, and it seems to be like vines.
Yeah, yeah. So they've got to do that, but like to make this little sandbag. One of them basically unturns his pockets to do it, and they make it out of a pocket.
Yeah.
But the man's pockets are so long that I just couldn't get over it. I was like, how big are this fella's pockets? And because they are like socks when he sort of unfurls
them.
Thinking
about it now, it is distracting.
Absolutely. I don't think enough is said about this man's pockets.
How did I manage to watch that film and not notice?
I would have thought you'd be well up on the pockets. I would have thought, how about these pockets? Because they're long. But then is that a style? Are there countries where you have incredibly long pockets?
Well, I'm a woman. All my clothes just have those fake pockets.
Sure.
We're sold jackets that don't have pockets at all.
And are they like stitched up pockets?
Yeah, that's some nonsense.
You often get those on suits if you're a man. But you have to cut through them.
I'm wearing jeans right now where the pockets are so small that they're notably small.
Can you put anything in them?
No, you can't even put a phone in them. You can put a quarter of a phone in them.
Right.
It's useless.
Yeah,
you can put some
work.
Bus money in it, I think.
Yeah. But will that be secure?
No.
Or will that just come out?
Yeah, it'll just come out.
Why don't women have pockets? I never really understand this thing.
It's the great injustice of our gender. You know, whenever you see a woman and she's wearing a dress and you go, oh, nice dress, and she'll tell you it has pockets. That's because we've spent decades never having pockets.
I don't understand.
Having nowhere to put anything.
Is this the thing that goes back to, like, women shouldn't have any money or something? Is that what it is? Like, what's the history of it?
I don't know. I haven't actually Googled it. I've just sat there getting angry, which I think is helpful.
Yeah. I like putting things in a pocket. I like having things
carrying a bag around, and I don't know what to do in summer because all my pockets are in my jacket.
How often do you go to a supermarket, think you only go for like one thing, and then you go, I don't need a bag. And then you end up with like armfuls of stuff that you're trying to like balance an orange on top of or something. Do you ever do that?
No, because I recently learned how to drive a car, so now I go and do big shops.
Oh man.
I drive to the supermarkets that have a car park.
You've changed since.
I've totally changed.
Basically, people that work in comic shops ever, no one in comic shops ever knows how to drive.
I think I was doomed to work in a comic shop because I never learned how to drive as a teenager. Had I learned how to drive, my life would have been so different.
Sure. No one in comic shops. It's like a fact.
No cartoonists know how to drive either.
Yeah. They're just sort of, we're kind of useless people.
Even my dad, who's a comic artist, my mum used to drive him everywhere.
Of course. That's like, we're just pedestrians. We can't drive.
You can draw or you can drive.
And you've learned to drive in, since in between your last appearance on Fan Club, you've become a driver.
I've become an adult. I've become a motorist. I'm essentially, I am totally Alan Partridge.
You've just become this. Like, and that's it, because now you know about...
You pull a face now, but wait until I give you a lift.
Well, have a lift. I don't mind having a lift.
You're going to love it, because my glove box is full of sweets. I think you can't be a motorist. You can't have a car unless you've got a car full of sweets. I've got sherbet lemons. Good. I've got polo sweets. Mints, humbugs. I've got Fox's Glacier fruits.
Well, how are you storing your polos? Are they in a polos in a just in the
in a multi pack? I get a multi pack of polos and I put them in the glove box.
Oh, nice. What other sweets have you got? Fox's Glacier mints.
Yeah, Fox's Glacier mints.
I tell you, right?
They're my favourite, so I keep them in the.
Are foxes
door.
That do the Glacier mints? Are they the same foxes that do party rings?
They're your guys.
Natalie, can you Google that? Because if they are, man, they're absolutely, they're way
they're
ahead.
They're smashing it.
Absolutely smashing
so
it.
So if you were in my car, which sweet would you take if I offered you
Well, I'd have a Glacier mint, mm-hmm. but I'd try and...
It's not a Glacier mint, it's the Glacier fruit.
Oh, well, that's different. I enjoy a Glacier fruit. And I like a Glacier mint, but you've almost got to... arrange. It's almost like the your Glacier mint is like an after dinner mint.
Yes.
Because if you have it first, it's going to spoil the taste of the fruits.
Mm-hmm.
So you can't have a mint before you're eating your fruits.
Well, this is sort of like what I've discussed with my dad as to the order in which you should eat a club biscuit. A club biscuit.
Cool.
Yeah. What's well, I always go. Well, we always have orange and mint. When he's visiting, I'll always fill the fridge.
Oh, so sorry, different ones in order.
Yeah, so I think it should be orange, and then the mint is the after dinner mint.
Of course, that makes sense. Yeah,
only a lunatic would do it the other way
around.
Yeah,
one's orange is like a pudding, and the other one's like an after. It's like an after eight.
Exactly.
It's like civilized. You'd have that with like a cognac.
Exactly. But then, what would you do with the one that's got the fruit in it?
I don't.
Is
think
that like your main? It's a disgusting one, so I never have it.
But
in
you
the
know
house.
What? I mean, this is controversial. I don't like a chocolate orange.
What?
I don't like a chocolate orange. I'm not into it. I find it a weird mixture. It's I don't think it works. I think it's a bad mix.
Your favourite chocolate is white, though, isn't it?
Oh, I love a white chocolate.
Have you ever told the listeners of Fan Club about Biscuitgate?
No, because... Well, I can tell them, but I don't know if this is... essentially, this was a crime that happened. that was perpetrated against me, and... I'm not really over it. I don't think I've had the sufficient victim support that you should have after a trauma.
You've had hours of therapy with me in pubs. Like, oh. I don't think you've gone a week without mentioning
me. But, you know, it's because it really it threw me because you realise you can't trust people. And that's what it is. You put a lot of faith in people, don't you? In human nature. And people who are often like people that you think are friends, and then you realise that you can't actually trust them, and that someone that's like villainy operating in your vicinity. And well, basically, what happened was I bought from M&S some extra chocolatey white chocolate rounds.
A great biscuit.
A great biscuit. The best, possibly.
A treat biscuit. You're not going to get them all the time.
Oh, of course not. Because what are they, like £4?
And they're too chocolatey.
Yeah, they're too chocolatey, extra chocolatey. They are thick with chocolate. And you've got a biscuit base in them, but the biscuit base is teeny. I'm picturing like the biscuit base must be thin, like a sort of bit of cardboard or something.
Yeah, it's sort of like M&S thought that you can sell chocolate cheaper if it's a biscuit. So if they technically put biscuit in it.
Yeah.
That sort of thing. Yeah. It's that amount of
It's probably of that thing, isn't it, when people talk about Jaffa cake. It's probably something to do with that. So there's like a whisper of biscuit. Not of whisper, that's a different chocolate. But you've got like a biscuit with like thick white chocolate. And you get it. I think you get eight altogether. You get two layers.
And there's two biscuits per layer.
Two biscuits per layer. And so I got this, and it's a lovely biscuit. It's a treat biscuit. And
also from the M&S, you had to go on a bit of a walk. It wasn't next door to the shop.
I'd gone for a walk. I'd got that as a treat. And I'd even said to people, because I'm not a monster, hey, guys, if you want a extra chocolatey white chocolate round, have one. Because I'm not a monster. And I had one, right? I had one of these biscuits. Hayley was the only one who admitted to having one. Or was it two?
I had two.
She had two. right? I left these biscuits, I reckon, for half an hour. I came back and there was one biscuit. And one biscuit is worse because it's someone who... They believe that they haven't eaten all the biscuits.
Yeah.
That's like someone going...
I've left one square on the roll.
Yeah, so it isn't... Yeah, that's it. It's that. It's people that won't change toilet paper. It's And it's that thing, well, I didn't eat all the biscuits because there's one left. I definitely didn't. And so what I did, I saw this. I was apoplectic about this. I couldn't believe it. Because I'd had one, a solo biscuit. You'd had more biscuit than I'd had.
Yeah, but I'm pretty sure, like, I think when you offered me one, like, the packet was open.
Mm.
So, like, I wouldn't be going back and seeing, like, two biscuits left and going one last one. I don't remember the exact thing that happened, but...
Sure. I don't think it is you. But anyway, basically, I went around everyone in the comic shop and I was demanding, including my boss, furious... Who has eaten my biscuits? And everyone, one by one. Hayley said, two. I had two, right? Wasn't happy about that. But but you know what? I respect the honesty of it. And that's trust. I went, well, okay. Well, that's all right. But then you didn't have eight.
No.
All right. And then, but then I asked everyone else, and no one else admitted to having even one.
No, I even didn't touch your biscuits. I didn't touch
even
your biscuits.
People, even when I'd said, you can have one. So if you'd gone around everyone, you'd really only have to account... Because you have to account for every biscuit.
Yeah.
One. I had one. You had two.
That's three, right? Biscuits out
three
of eight.
Three biscuits. One left. Mm-hmm. So that would be four. So there's four biscuits
and
of
there's
high
me
quality.
With white chocolate all around my face, looking like I've eaten all of them.
But then I asked everyone, and no one would even... It's like, I mean, just say if you've had one. I didn't have any. No one else admitted to having even one biscuit, which is one that I'd also agreed to. So they could have said, oh, I had one, and that would be absolutely within the realm of, like...
If everyone had had one, I think there were three other people in the shop.
So do I.
So you would have had two...
I know, they were.
Two left?
Yeah. So it'd still be, and that would be nice. I reckon I... Because I only really want about three.
Yeah.
And that would be satisfying. But there was one left, one, and that person, if you can call them, that creature who took
it's
that,
maggot,
yeah, absolute maggot, who was eating my biscuits. Like it's that as well. I'd have liked them more if they'd eaten them all.
And then I'd come gone, to you and said, "I've eaten them all."
Yeah.
But then what happened?
Oh, and then also, I think my boss said, "Oh, I'll just buy some more if you want some more." And I said, "No, no. I want someone to admit that they've eaten them. I don't want more because I think what happened was, I think I had flipped. I don't, I think
you
it
want,
wasn't.
You didn't want I biscuits think, anymore. You wanted an admission of guilt.
That's what I wanted. I wanted justice. That's what I wanted. And it become bigger than biscuits. That's what it was. Because he'd said, I don't know as well. I always wonder if that's a double bluff because he was like, well, I didn't eat them. But if you're going to make... Because also...
If you're not going to get back to work...
This sounds like I'm being... Like, and there's a jokey element to this.
It wasn't jokey at the time.
It was not funny at the time.
It's the only time I found you scary.
Terrible. I was really angry. And he was like, well, just buy some more if you're going to be like that. And I was like, no. Although I might have said, yes, but... I do. But I want to know who's eating them. And that was it. I just wanted justice. That's all I wanted.
And you've never had it?
Never
and
had
how
it.
How long ago was that? 8 years?
I reckon 8 years ago.
Yeah.
I think about it all the time. All those people. You think you know people, don't you? And that's it. That's a little window into the post-apocalypse how people are going to be. Mm-hmm. That's Mad Max level of, like, everyone's just going to turn on each other.
Also, this is a window into what people actually think about in the comic shop, mm-hmm. which is, you know, just biscuits. It's not anything like in the Big Bang Theory. That's all nonsense.
I know people talk about biscuits, tea, just the big things.
Yeah. The toilet. Who's broken it lately?
Yeah, who's broken the toilet?
Which customers are using it despite the fact they have their own toilet? These are the important things.
People that have used the toilet without asking because they've asked once before.
Because they get some sick thrill out of being so close to the comic shop
people
that they can just waltz in. They save it. They don't even use it in their own office. They save it until they get to the comic shop.
Although, mind you, I quite like popping into a shop that I've worked in to use a toilet.
Oh, yeah, that's all I use Gosh for now.
Yeah, it's good. It's a home away from home. It's a toilet away from home. But it's nice to have a toilet in town you can just pop into.
One of the saddest things about being freelance is I no longer have a key to a toilet in the middle of town. Although I do have a BBC pass.
You do.
So I have popped into BBC.
Because you're on like a proper broadcast, aren't you? You work on... You talk about telly on the radio. And you had a show called Unpopped at the BBC.
Mm-hmm.
Well, you were like Melvin Bragg.
Essentially.
Like
but talking
time.
About nonsense that doesn't matter.
Sure. Sure. That's right. So you're like, how does it feel to be at FUBAR? Is it intimidating?
It's a little bit. Your desk is bigger than my desk.
Bigger desk?
Yeah, bigger desk. I do mine from a little cupboard.
You've got a cough button, though, haven't you, on your radio?
If you go into the smaller, older studios, and there's a little mic, and it's got a cough button.
Right. We've got one. Have you got this one, though?
Google account.
Have you got that on the BBC?
No, not even allowed to drop a C-bomb on the BBC.
No, I'm not surprised. You can on FUBAR. No one minds. No one minds. Oh, we've got some news just in. Fox's Glacier Mints were developed by Eric Fox. That's a cool name. One of the original founders of Fox's Confectionery. Companion products are Fox's Glacier Mints and Fox's Glacier Dark.
What's Glacier Dark?
I don't know. Can we do some research into Fox's Glacier Dark? Fox's Biscuits is a British biscuit manufacturer founded by the Fox family in a terrace house in West Yorkshire in 1853. Terrace house is a weird detail in that.
Mm.
Why is that in there? The business is known for mass market biscuits and chocolate covered biscuit bars. Oop. Such as Rocky.
Rocky is a good biscuit.
It's a good biscuit.
Mm.
Classic.
I don't know what that is.
A classic biscuit. Echo. Crunch creamed. And this, I disagree with this. Children's favourite party rings. Children's
favourite.
Then
that Metcalf's favourite. I had a party once and you brought party rings.
Yeah,
it's no party without party rings.
No party without party rings. That's what I say. And cheaper than booze. So always worth it. 45p often. A great a Fox's Glacier Dark. Oh, it's like a dark fruits.
Oh, aniseed.
Is that aniseed? Is it? Hang on. Bear with me a minute. Licorice. I could go some Fox's Glacier Darks.
No, you won't find these in my car.
I've never seen them, though. So they are a different company, Fox's Biscuits and Fox's. They should team up. Because they could take over the world.
They say to each other, we make the best ones. So.
Yeah. Sugar-based... sugar-based company called Foxes. Do you know what? It's disappointing that they're not the same people, though, right?
It is. I assumed they were.
I like the idea that they would be.
Are they both from Yorkshire?
Can we look that up, please? Are they both from Yorkshire? Could they be related without knowing it? Perhaps they're two like Cain and Abel. Perhaps they hate each other, but they're like brothers. Leicester and Yorkshire. Okay. I guess it is. Oh, blimey, it's 12:43 and we've been talking about biscuits. now, here's a thing. I think we should play a song. And normally, of course, Nick Helm's here and he would play an Alice Cooper track. And it seems I'm a big fan of tradition and I think it'd be remiss not to. And also, because it's basically the school holidays, it would seem the best week in the year to play School's Out, because school is out. It is appropriate. So here's some Alice Cooper.
Man!
Helm and Nathaniel Metcalf's Fan Club on FUBAR Radio.
Hello, we're back, and I successfully navigated the thing there. Have I, though? You can hear me, can't you?
I can.
Good, yeah.
Does that matter?
Good, good. So I've successfully navigated on the desk from song, jingle, mics. Thank you. Pretty pleased with myself? Pretty pleased with myself? Now, we have got some fan mail in. We've got a tweet who has highlighted that I said my balls are like two eggs in a ramen soup. I guess it's more of a broth of ramen, though, isn't it?
Yeah.
So maybe... and
it was, you could play the sexy jingle.
The sexy jingle? Is there a sexy jingle? Oh, yeah, we have got a sexy jingle. We've got this one.
Ramen soup.
That's pretty sexy. Like two eggs in a ramen soup.
If you get two eggs in a ramen soup, you're winning, because you only get one, really.
Sure. I was sort of thinking of one, like, I think often they cut it in half, don't they?
They do.
So that's what I sort of... Two halves of a single egg. half a tea-stained egg. No, thanks. I like tea. I like eggs. But don't get it. I don't understand it. Okay, let's do some fan mail. Okay, let's see if I can get this right. not shotgun my cock. Let me find the right cue. Okay, I think I've got it. Yeah, that's it, isn't it? Yeah. Theme from the Deer Hunter. Let's see. Let's get it. Aloha, Nick and Nat. I would like to suggest a guest for you. Sean Williamson, a.k.a. Barry from EastEnders. You don't need to tell me, mate. I think that would really make me tell my friends. Hugs and kisses from North Yorkshire. Kiss, kiss.
Is that where Foxes is from? I forget.
I think it might be. Yeah. Maybe he's one of the Fox family. Or she. West Yorkshire, not the North Yorkshire. North Yorkshire, of course, was West Yorkshire, where Foxes come from. Also have the police, which were responsible for the Yorkshire Ripper and Savile. That's West Yorkshire police, isn't it? Mm.
Wait, yeah. were they the ones who found him? Or the other ones?
No, wasn't it West Yorkshire? I think West Yorkshire are all the ones who meant to be a bit dodgy.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah, who's that from? Though. Who's that from? Do we know the name? Nameless. A nameless person wants... Could we have...
Is this because they have shame over watching EastEnders?
Well, it says kiss, kiss at the end, unless it's a double X. It's not triple X. It's not Vin Diesel, possibly, who wants Sean Williamson on. What's... I'd have Sean Williamson on. I think he seems quite nice. Nice fella. I'd love to have Sean Williamson on. I know he'd probably pick Mustang Sally, wouldn't he? He sings that kind of stuff. And I like him. I like him. Hi, both. Love the show. Would love more gossip from Nick's TV appearances. What is working with Jimmy Carr like? His comedy is 10 out of 10. Just like this show, 5 out of 5. Lucas. I quite like that as a thing. 10 out of 10, just like this show, 5 out of 5. What's better, 10 out of 10 or 5 out of 5?
10 out of 10, you've got more stages of failure.
I think that's right. Unless you do it in halves. Do you know what? I dislike when film magazines do a review out of 5. Mm-hmm. And they use half numbers, because I always think, just do out of 10 then. It annoys me. Anyway, that's by the by. I've never worked with Jimmy Carr. I've never met him. But I was once at Christmas, I was on an escalator, and I heard his distinctive laugh.
Like a seal.
Like a seal, and thought, I bet that's Jimmy Carr. And it was. He was on an escalator with me. Merry Christmas.
I think he's telling that story somewhere else.
Yeah, I bet he is. He saw me. Hey, guys. I imagine you two were a sweaty ball of adorable mess this week. I don't know. That's nice. Due to the heat. What's your favourite temperate? And what do you think John Carpenter's one is? Also, if you were a carpenter called John, would you chisel?
What would you chisel?
What would you chisel? Thanks, Aunt Sally. Is it actually Aunt Sally, you think, from Wurzel Gummidge? Is that...
I think so, yeah. Well, she hasn't Eunice specified Stubbs. That it's not. So.
Yeah, so I'll assume this is Eunice Stubbs herself. I think they mean temperature, yeah. My favourite temperature is probably, I reckon, about 15 degrees C.
I think mine is 26.
Ooh.
Yeah.
I quite like being cold.
I don't know what John Carpenter's is, but I... I did have a chance to ask him when I interviewed him.
Oh, you did? You've met John Carpenter, haven't you?
Yeah, and everybody said, oh, he's difficult. He's not a fun interview. He remains one of my favourite interviewees because he spent the entire time bitching about Clint Eastwood.
Yes. But that's what I think people, when people say people are difficult, I always think, are they?
I think that's difficult? Probably more on you.
Yeah, I think just because I think often people interview people who have got no interest in them. And have just done no research or something.
Yeah. Well, I see other people coming to like roundtable interviews and you go, how are you here and not embarrassed?
Yeah.
So if somebody says, oh, they're difficult, I don't listen to them.
Why didn't you like Clint, says Natalie.
Why didn't he like Clint?
Why didn't John Carpenter like Clint?
Clint Eastwood had just said something bad and stupid politically. I can't remember what it was. It could have been any number of things.
Was it the one where he pretended a chair was Barack Obama? Do you remember that one?
I think
he spoke to a chair.
I think Eastwood had just done an interview in GQ magazine or something. I don't remember. But
that's strange because he must have liked Eastwood. He must be a big Eastwood fan.
I'm a big Eastwood fan, sure. Not of the person, but what do you think is peak Eastwood? I think it's Escape from Alcatraz.
That's because he wears like a white T-shirt, isn't it? And that's because you fancy him in that era.
I fancy
him. Misty for me, that era, yeah. Kind of 70s.
Yeah.
Well, I think all those films he made in that era are all pretty tip-top.
When he, like, between 40 and 50, I think is peak Eastwood.
How old is he really now? Fit. So what are we talking about, years? What are your prime years?
I think sort of mid-70s, early 80s, maybe.
Okay.
When was Alcatraz? Was that 70?
I don't know. Escape
something?
From Alcatraz. Can we get a year on Escape from Alcatraz? She's on the phone.
Abandoned her post.
Okay. Well, we'll come back to that. Hi, lads. Hang on. No, we've lost the music, haven't we? Of course we have. Hang on. I'll do that. We'll do the other one. We've done Cavatina. We've also got this one. Hi, lads. 4.9 out of 5 for the podcast. 2.5 for effort. Oh, I see. I can't believe you can sit and talk for a living. I mean, if you think this is a living, you think I'd be having a very frugal life.
Also, I saw you write something on a bit of paper. That is more than 2.5 for effort.
Oh, yeah. I'm very jealous. Can you tell? Debs. Well, that's it. I mean, I don't think you would be jealous, Debs, if you actually saw it. It's very much not a living we're getting. I'd love a living. I'd love to do this. I mean, talk about biscuits. But I don't think this is a job. I don't think you can do you know, I'm having a nice time. But it's not a living, Debs. Hi, boys. Oh, what is your hottest day of the year tips for a guy in his early 30s trying to avoid his screaming kid? The only good thing about kids, if the ice cream, Donny, I think he means is the ice cream. Well, that's a nice thing about, yeah, that's a nice thing to do on the hottest day of the year. I think not leaving the house is the best thing to do.
Everybody is panicking and going out and trying to find somewhere cooler. If you just sit very still,
just sit in your house,
in the shade, you will be cool.
Sure.
Amateurs.
Ice cream's a good idea, though.
What's your favourite ice cream?
Ooh, that's tough. I sometimes go by colour. If there's a blue thing, I'll have one that's blue, thanks.
Blue flavour. Have you used your slush puppy yet that you've
got? Do you know what? It's difficult because it's to avoid it, I have to put I've got a slush puppy machine, guys. And I've got to you've got to put the inside of it into a freezer first.
Oh, so it includes forethought.
Yeah, so and it's that. I need to, it's like you've got a...
This
it's
is
like
the equivalent of batteries not included.
You can't eat a banana when you want a banana. If you buy one from a supermarket, you can get a green one, but you've got to sort of imagine when you want to eat one.
Right.
You can't have just a banana you have now.
How small is your freezer that you can't just stick the thing in there constantly?
Oh, I suppose I could. No, I think it's... My freezer's like trays, though. You sort of pull out little trays. So I think, you know, it does kind of make sense that I'm trying to think if I can get it to... I might have to remove a tray just to get the thing in. You don't need to know about the mechanics of my freezer. this isn't radio. It technically is. Hello. Ooh. Hello. I've been wondering what size feet you have and did they get sweaty this week? Is this a pervert? What is your opinion on flip-flops? I believe in Australia they call them thongs.
They do call them thongs.
Nice one, Doug. Thanks for coming in and clearing that up. what size feet do I have? I have size 9 feet.
Really?
Yeah.
I have a size 8.
I think technically, if I could have an 8.5, I think they would fit, but often you can't. I think 9. I'm about a 9.
You said earlier that you'd be pouring water out of your shoes.
Yeah. That's what it's been like. I think what you don't need to... Like yesterday, I had shoes and socks because I was avoiding... Because I can't not wear socks in my shoes. That feels weird as well.
You'd be sweatier if you didn't. Also, what is your opinion on flip-flops? I think they should be outlawed. I don't like seeing people's feet. You should have shame. They're disgusting.
I think if I was wearing a short, which I never do...
A short?
Yeah. Is that right?
Singular. Do you work in fashion now?
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, probably, if you saw me. I think I would have if I wore shorts, I would have as much problem with flip-flops as I'd have with shorts. I think if I was going all out, I probably would go.
I think you would look like the most awkward man in the room. Not because they look terrible on you, but you would be trying to
feel it.
You would feel it. It would come out in your face. Yeah.
Saw your podcast on iTunes. Gave it a go. Sounds all right. We'll need to hear a few more episodes before I can rate it. So far, you're on a solid 3 out of 5. The Alice Cooper is bringing you down.
Oh, I think this is just the wrong person. This is not the podcast for you. Alice Cooper is...
That's a main... If you don't like that, there's going to be a lot more of that. But equally, are you starting now? Because if you've just started listening from the start, you're going to have to listen to an awful lot of episodes before you get your thing read out. And then would it still be a 3? I reckon by the time you get to this one, it'll be a 1, if you even make it this far. Lots of people not leaving their names. And that is the reviews. Now, I mean, crikey, look at this. We've nearly done a whole hour of top quality chat. We've basically played one song on behalf of Nick Helm, who isn't here. Hasn't bothered showing up.
In memory of Nick Helm.
In memory of R.I.P. And it's our guest here as well. Oh, wow. So you should probably get them out. I think it is only right and fair for me to play your track. Mm-hmm. And it is... why have you picked this track?
I've picked this. It's The Ramones' Pet Sematary. And I picked it because Pet Sematary is my favourite Stephen King book. And also... I learned that Charles Adams,
the great
cartoonist and Adams Family creator, he was not only married in a pet cemetery, but after he was cremated, he had his ashes scattered in a pet cemetery.
Wow, that's good.
What a guy.
Yeah, I like him. I don't know what, have you ever seen a picture of Charles Adams?
Yeah, he looks kind of normal.
Yeah. But I always think that about Gomez in the Adams Family. Mm. I never think he looks particularly weird or creepy.
No.
Is he meant to look like a sort of Vincent Price? Is that the idea?
Yeah.
I always think Vincent Price just looks quite kind of cool. Gomez, sorry. Looks just kind of cool. And
yeah, they're all cool guys. I think this is why we're wrong, Nat. Right. We're not made for this world.
I don't think they look like weird people. They seem all right.
No. Okay. I think they're great guys.
Right, okay. Okay, well, here we go. Well, I quite like that I asked you why you picked this song. Because this is like Desert Island Discs.
Exactly. There's reasons behind everything.
Okay, let's go for this. Oop.
Uh-oh.
Yeah, this is it. Talking up to the lyric.
Under the octopus with the steamboats, ancient goblins and wild gnomes come at the grand line making a sound. The smell of death is all around. And at night when the cold wind blows, no one cares, nobody knows. I don't want to be buried in a pet cemetery. I don't want to live my life again. I don't want to be buried in a pet cemetery. I don't want to live my life again. Fall addicted to the sacred place. This ain't a dream, I can't escape. More limbs and fangs that are picking up bones. Spirits moaning among the tombstones. And at night when the moon is bright, someone cries something. I don't
skeleton dance. I curse these days. And at night when the wolves cry out, listen close, then you can hear me shout. I don't wanna be buried in a pet cemetery. I don't want to live my life again. I don't wanna be buried in a pet cemetery. I don't want to live my life again.
Hello and welcome back to Nick and Nat's Fan Club, and we are joined in the second hour by our special guest, Ms. Ginger Johnson.
Hello, that's me. Yes, hello, hi.
Hello, and you're about to go up to the Edinburgh Festival.
Yes, in about 19 hours.
19 hours?
Not that I'm counting, but it's very, very soon, yes.
Why starting so early?
Well, I've got a tech rehearsal on Sunday morning, and also I've got to get the puppets settled in the flat, you know, and naturalised
make sure
to the area.
All right.
Yeah, or they won't perform, you know.
Now, I often go up to the Edinburgh Festival in the role of being a stand-up comedian. How do you feel about the Edinburgh Festival?
I'm very excited. I've been lots of times to see lots of things, and I've done a couple of spots there before, you know, in other shows.
Oh, you've never done the whole run before?
No, I've never done the whole run before. So I'm very excited. I started on me Baroccas last week. And I'm looking forward to it.
Nat used to come back from Edinburgh looking like he was a reanimated corpse.
Do you know? Right. Yeah, absolutely.
Well, I'm heading there looking like one, so God knows what I'm going to be when I get back.
It's sort of a great place, and I don't want to put you off. I now find, do you know, like when you get out of Edinburgh Waverley Station now, and I smell that weird Weetabix air that they've got there.
Yes,
they've got these like breweries there that have this sort of, you get this smell. But I often find that smell often just gives me some sort of Vietnam flashback. I have like a horrible, oh my god, it's here. Oh god. I once got on a train at King's Cross, and it was the Edinburgh train, but I was changing and I forgot. And I was on a train like in some other time of year, and it said, "This is the train to Edinburgh Wave." And I had a panic. Like it was like it was like waking up in a nightmare.
I'm just hoping that there's plenty of alcohol on the cafe bar trolley. I imagine it'll be fine.
It will be. And also,
I've got to learn me words. That's what I really should be doing on the train. I should be concentrating on doing that.
When's your first night?
Wednesday coming. I think it's the 30th or the 31st. I don't know. I haven't
looked. Okay, so you've got to be there. And what area are you staying in Edinburgh?
I would hate it if any of my vicious admirers might come and turn up near my house. But I'm near the Meadows.
Oh yeah, it's nice, very nice.
Right,
very nice.
Okay, if you say so.
what? Where are you performing in Edinburgh?
I'm performing at the Pleasance in the Pleasance Dome.
Okay,
and we were actually right next door to Pleasance Islington, aren't we? And that's how I ended up doing that, because I did a big Christmas show there.
You did this Krampus show,
yeah,
right?
That's right.
Right,
that's
I was just trying to read up on this. And what? So are you interested in the Krampus and
yes,
that kind
absolutely
of Krampus, horror?
I am a big fan of Krampus. I think Krampus is a very misunderstood character.
Sure,
and I tried to give him a little bit of a new life in the show at Christmas, but and in the process of that, the Pleasance managed to talk me into coming to Edinburgh, so here I am. That's what it's going to be.
But I think you're going to have a great time in Edinburgh.
Oh, definitely. I'm so excited. The kind of the terror to excitement scale flips every few hours or so, you know.
Oh, sure. I think that's natural. You shouldn't be. I don't want to put, I feel like I'm just saying terror. I mean, what I'm talking about is my experience of Edinburgh, whereas I think what you've probably got is a good show, which is probably the going up there with a show that is maybe not the best, which is probably why Nick Helm he's rehearsing now rather than turning up for this. It's because he needs to have a good show so that you don't panic and be sick through your teeth or something on the way up. So you're part of Sink the Pink Collective.
Yes, that's
and
right.
And I don't know a lot about them, but I'm aware of them just from being about town.
Yes.
And sort of
everywhere.
Seeing them on the names of
everywhere.
Festival posters and things.
Yeah, that's
so
right.
So do you want to tell us a bit about Sink the Pink?
So Sink the Pink are a queer clubbing collective that was set up at, it's 11 years this year, by Glymphemus and Amy Zing. And I joined them about 5 years ago. And it's a big queer dress-up party where everyone is invited and everyone can express themselves in any way that they want to be. And we do huge stage shows with like 25 drag queens at a time on stage dancing. You know, it's quite a trip.
How does
you know?
It work as a collective? Is the work you do part of that collective? Do you see yourself always as part of that, like a production of? Or
I think, well, people move in and out of it. You know, most of us are doing something else at the same time. I kind of host and MC most of the gigs. And then I write and direct and star in the Christmas show every year, which is cush, really, isn't it?
So now, even though it's a collective, does it feel like there's a sort of hierarchy?
I mean, there's no, not really. I think the hierarchy is a hierarchy of fabulousness. You know,
right.
It's not that is the politics. There's nothing else going on there. You know, if you're really amazing, then you're there. You're in it. You know,
right.
And that can change week to week. Sometimes you have a bad week. Sometimes your wig falls off. You know,
25 drag queens on stage. What are the dressing rooms like?
Going back to Vietnam, I mean, it depends. Our kind of spiritual home at the moment is at the Troxy. We do a lot of our big events at the Troxy, and that's really amazing. The kind of detritus that you'll find in those. It's also a very, very specific smell that follows around 25 drag queens. It's somewhere in between like vodka, poppers, and Greggs. You know, like you're in that region, lovely, homely smell. But it takes a strong stage to have 25 stomping drag queens on it as well.
I think, you know, it's one of the best things about drag queens, I think, in that culture, is that idea that I think there's something within stand-up where everyone likes the idea of it being a bit like, yeah, it's not showbiz, we're doing something else.
Oh,
and I really hate that. I hate that idea. Because it's like, it is showbiz. But what I also like about showbiz is things where it just isn't. And I think the dressing room is a great example of what people think of as being quite a showbiz thing.
Yes.
Whereas I've never seen a dressing room which is remotely even nice.
Well, especially with a drag queen, if you think that you would think that because a drag queen is so glamorous, the dressing room might be glamorous.
Yeah.
But the fact is that we start off as like tired 30-year-old homosexual man, you know. So it takes a lot of glue and elastic and effort to kind of come out the other side of that, and the you know, things fall by the wayside. The number of chairs I've broken trying to pull on a pair of Spanx.
it's going to probably be a hot room with everybody in it.
Oh,
so how
God,
are you supposed
worst.
To put all the makeup on your face? Is it just sliding down onto your shoulders?
Just gradually lower and lower. Eventually your eyebrows are on your knees, you know. That's just how it goes. You've got to find yourself a secluded corner to try and get a fan to sort you out. But no, it's not easy. It's not easy. But then I say it's not easy. I mean, my job is putting on clown paint, jumping around like a lunatic. So there's a lot harder jobs out there. You know, I'm fully
like
aware
this
of
one
that.
Right now?
Yeah, this is a hard job, what I'm doing right now. Yeah. But that's why we think about dressing rooms. Because often you see in dressing rooms, you have things like, I mean, so you'll see some of the worst things you'll ever see in your life in a dressing room, won't you? Backstage. And I always think like, there's that idea of sort of glamour, and people imagine mirrors with light bulbs all around them.
But I wish.
You're much more likely.
You wish you had one light bulb.
You're much more likely to find like a Volvic bottle with piss in where someone hasn't been able, because it's like, there's no toilets in there or whatever, and they can't go to the toilets. They can't, the public toilets, you have to go through the crowd to get them. So you just find things like, well, there's a bottle of piss, and there's a...
and a fridge normally that doesn't work.
Yes,
you know, that's where the bottle of piss is, you know.
I'm a big fan of Anna Mann's Instagrams where she turns around, she says, I'm in my glamorous dressing room, and it's always just the disabled toilet that they've stuck in.
The number of disabled toilets I have stood in and shoved my own bollocks back inside my body, I cannot begin to tell you. I could write a book about that.
Please do.
But that's like, so Sink the Pink, do you feel like you've been kind of at the forefront of what is like, what feels like a real kind of renaissance in the kind of drag culture and things?
I think we've been trying to bring a fun element to it, and something that doesn't take itself too seriously, you know, because although as absurd as drag might be from the outside, some people do take themselves very seriously. I mean, I'm definitely guilty of that sometimes. I think if you take yourself to the Edinburgh Festival, you've probably got some kind of serious idea about yourself. Whether that turns out to be a good one or not, we'll find out. We've been everywhere for a little while now, you know. And some of the girls are currently on tour with Mel C around the world.
Wow.
Which is really amazing, you know, going out to, they did Pride in Brazil. There were some like 4 million people at Pride. Absolutely amazing, you know. And it's great, especially when we do touring within the UK and we go out to places that are outside of London. You know, I moved to London because in Newcastle, where I come from, there wasn't the drag culture that I really wanted to have. There has been since. Some people have put some really amazing hard work in up in Newcastle and have really built the scene there. But, you know, you go to places, we did a Freshers tour a few years ago, and some of these people have never seen a drag queen in their life. You know, and that's really exciting, you know, to be that drag queen that they see, you know, it's great.
Where's that kind of renaissance come from? Because you sort of think in the sort of, especially in the UK, you would have that thing, I guess, up to what I think of like the sort of 70s, and you'd have what would be then like female impersonators would be their kind of, but it's not really, it's not the same thing. But there's a sort of, but I quite like that when it sort of has that funny mixture, like a sort of Paul O'Grady, Lily Savage thing.
Yes.
Which sort of, and I think that's where it works best. Yeah. I think that kind
Well, there was a moment in the 90s, wasn't there, when Lily Savage was kicking around and Dame Edna was around. And you know, Mrs. Merton really is a drag queen character, I would say, you know. There is a bit of a renaissance at the moment. I think that's partly to do with RuPaul's Drag Race, the program that's had such huge success. And that's brought people back. That's definitely opened up job opportunities for drag queens. I've done jobs in the last few years that you would never have dreamed a drag queen would do. I did a funeral 2 weeks ago. And I don't mean a wake, I mean the funeral.
What, standing at the head of the grave?
In the crematorium. Oh. Yeah, no, the whole business.
Did you get to press the button where the coffin goes down?
No, they didn't have that as part of the ceremony, thankfully. But I asked if they could open the curtains and I would come through, but there wasn't enough, like climb through from the oven, you know. They weren't really into it. It was actually a really wonderful, amazing experience, and the family that had asked me to do it it was amazing, really touching.
Why did they choose a drag queen?
They chose a drag queen because it was the lady's mum who died. She had always been a big supporter of the queer community. You know, she was a real ally, and she'd run pubs and clubs in North London and nightclubs, and I think had been part of that scene. She was also super glamorous and, by their admission, an absolute nightmare.
She sounds amazing.
So some of the stuff about her life was just like really, really brilliant. So they decided that for the funeral, what they wanted was somebody, they wanted the funeral to have that element to it. So they actually didn't tell a lot of the family that I was going to be there leading the ceremony. But there was something really amazing about it, and it really brought to me the kind of, there is a real power in drag sometimes, because as people came around the corner in their big black cars, as they got out, they kind of couldn't help but laugh when they saw me, and I no one was in black, but I was in like head to toe gold fringe, big giant crown on my head, you know, like I really went for it. They asked me to really go for it, and it was great to kind of puncture the kind of somberness of the whole thing, and you know, it was really a really, really amazing experience. I'm not sure I'll do it again, if I'm really honest, because it was I've never been so nervous, actually. I've never been so nervous.
Well, you only get one go.
Well, exactly.
But I prefer a funeral over a wedding. I think
I don't know, lesbian wedding's the best. lesbian wedding is the absolute ideal booking, right? It is the best thing. Honestly, I'd take that booking over any other. In fact, I would set up a company organising lesbian weddings if I could. If I wasn't such an attention seeker and I was able to kind of do a job like that, that's what I'd be doing. Oh my God, they're the best fun. Always the best dancing, the best music. It's amazing.
Mm. Well, I think that's it, because I think I'm not. I mean, I think one of my big problems in life is I am probably one of the least fun people you could ever meet. In terms of like, I can't do dancing. I like people having dancing. You must do a little bit.
In a party situation, you're always the guy who's figured out what time the buffet is starting.
Oh yeah, no, yeah, that's it. I'm up for that. I'm up for hovering around some cellophane, waiting for like, or like even, or try and befriend a sort of waiter and go, What time is this kicking off, eh?
And you know which door the nibbles are coming out
sure,
of.
Sure, sure, and I know, right. Yeah. So I've got my eye on things. I'm having my own fun, right. But I don't think I'm good in that. I think I kind of, I like it in others. I really like, I'm not someone who's miserable or hates the idea of people having
fun.
Well,
that's the painting the picture you're painting at the moment, I'm not going to lie.
I know, but like I like the idea of it. I'm much more like, I'm much more that. I want a triangle sandwich. That's what I want at a party. That's okay. That's my kind of fun.
Did you stick around for the nibbles after the funeral?
No, I didn't. they moved. They went on to a golf club somewhere, and I'm not going to a golf club. Absolutely not. It's against every fibre of my body is to walk into a golf club. Absolutely.
I think
not.
You'd be mistressed for a golf club as well.
Well, maybe for the grass. I'm not sure.
I think it's extraordinary. Like the sort of influence of the kind of drag culture on actual regular things in the world that you kind of only spot. I really think it's astounding now when you see like you look at like sort of lots of women in their 20s, even things like makeup and fashion.
All
yeah. It's like influence
stuff that the drag queens have done for years. Like young girls are doing on these sort of round.
Yeah,
child faces.
It is insane. They look like baked beans with faces drawn on.
But they're all drawing the same face.
Yes,
on.
They just draw a brown circle around everything and shade it out. You know, it's not. It's so strange. I often get people come up to you and they want to say something nice. So they'll say, like a woman will say, "Oh my God, your makeup is beautiful. I wish I looked like that." And I'm like, "No, you do not. Like, I am Zippo the Clown in high shoes. Like, it's very nice of you to say so. But there are people." Go out wearing that much makeup, and all power to them. I mean, if that's what they want to do, go for it. Reinvent yourself every day if you like. Yeah. You know, that's really why the power of drag is so pervasive. It's because when you get into drag, you realize that the whole jig is up. You know, any idea of any kind of like reality just starts to crumble in front of you. You know, it's about accepting that, and I think that's why some people don't have a good reaction towards it, and it's because they cling to the idea that we can that we're not all the same mess as each other, you know.
Right.
They cling to the idea that they're somehow better or have somehow created themselves in a vision of something that is real and true and part of themselves. No, go away. We're all the same walking crisis, you know. And if I feel better in a huge curled updo wig and heels, then that's how I'm going to go and live my life. You know, that's it.
So how did you become involved with Sync the Pink then? What was your...
They have a competition every year called Miss Sync the Pink. And it's like a big pageant competition. And it's one of the highlights of the year for me because the things these girls and guys and others will do to get into this thing is insane. It's always amazing. And I entered that and I lost. And then a few weeks later, they called me into the office and said, you know, would you like to start to do it? Because Glyn, who one of the founders, he used to host all the time and he started to want to do other things. So I kind of started to take over from him gradually. And now I've been there nearly 6 years now, I think.
I really like the idea of something that feels so sort of big and glamorous, but like you say, there's an office and there's like it's sort of the two worlds colliding. It feels like it's like you think there's like an office that's full of drag queens that are doing admin about to do
in
with
false
putting
nails.
On yeah well that's what I like to imagine is happening, but it's
no
it's
we've got a team of people doing the admin for us.
Okay.
We're busy out there doing the gigs, you know? My favorite thing, I was at Latitude last weekend, and a drag queen at a festival just should not be a possibility. It just shouldn't exist, you know, because you're in a field, you don't have all of the necessary things that you need. You need piles and piles of luggage.
I won't go to a festival. I'm not a drag queen.
But that magic trick of like manifesting in a field in full drag is one of my favorite experiences in the world. So
do you come out of a tent?
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely, I do. Although Latitude's a bit fancy. They've got their porta cabins and things there, which was, I don't know, I felt like a bit of a fraud at Latitude this year. I'm not going to lie. I mean, it's a lovely festival. Please, I'd like to come back next year. But it's very nice and like very nice, you know. But there is something magical about being able to just come out the ground.
I think
you know?
You're right. Like, I think it's another show busy thing, isn't it? So I think one of the things that festivals work is that you have this idea of you shouldn't... Like, you don't want to see someone come out and be I'm one of you. I know, I don't want...
Hold
you
on.
Don't have that thing like someone coming out wearing wellies. You go, come on, mate, put some effort in.
If I saw a drag queen coming out of the Portaloos, I'd think, yes. Sure. That's what I would want to see.
But you don't want to have the festival on stage. I think you want to have be transported from something and see something on stage, which is like... different. So I think glamour works really well at a festival because everyone looks awful.
Yes.
Everyone's like covered in shit and like looking miserable. So actually it works really well, I think.
A few years ago at Glastonbury, I was in a group of 25 drag queens all dressed as Dolly Parton, watching Dolly Parton on the pyramid stage. And that was a transcendental experience.
Did she notice you?
No, because unfortunately there's like 200 metres of gold circle ticket holders, isn't there? So we were all like, Dolly! No, unfortunately not.
I'd love to know what would go through her mind, though. You, see it?
You bunch of bitches. That's what
I always used to get stroppy when I was a teenager when the drag queens had better legs than me in their short skirts. So if I was Dolly, I'd be looking at them going, unbelievable. This is
Dolly Parton is a drag queen. Like, for all, that's a wig for a start.
Yeah, it's a creation, isn't it? It's a creation.
Yeah, and she's covered in crystals and she plays a tiny saxophone. Like, I don't know. I can't think of
anyone
more of a
drag queen.
Isn't the
famous quote, like, it takes a lot of money to look this cheap?
Yes. Yes. Jane McDonald, she's a drag queen as well. You know, the drag queens walk among us.
When did you decide to use puppets? Were they always from the beginning?
I've always been a big fan of puppets. I think because I don't know, they're capable of anything, first of all. I mean, puppets are just drag queens with fewer bones, you know, like it's
and thumbs.
And thumbs in this case, yes. But it's just, I was a Punch and Judy man when I was about 12 years old.
Wow.
I used to do Punch and Judy shows. I used to do kids' birthday parties, and I was often at the same age or younger than the kids at the parties. So that's kind of where the interest in it started. And then I decided, I haven't used them much in my shows in the last few years, and then I decided with this new show, Happy Place, that I would bring them back because it's inspired by I'm a big Sesame Street fan and the Muppets, obviously. Mm. And it's inspired by a series of episodes that Sesame Street made when Hurricane Katrina happened. And it was an ongoing storyline that about a wind that had blown through Sesame Street and Big Bird's nest had been blown away. And during the episodes, Big Bird would kind of deal with the different aspects of that, of like losing some of his stuff and rebuilding his house, and all the characters would kind of rally around him and that kind of thing. And each of those episodes started with a scene with one of the human characters and one of the puppets reaching out through the fourth wall of the television to say to parents, you know, these episodes have been created specifically to help you and your child deal with stuff around the hurricane. So, and there were like other materials and things available to it. Now, at that time, I was going through quite a serious mental health crisis in my own life, and I was watching this thing, and as much as it really gave me a lot of heart to see that and see Big Bird rebuild his life, what I really wanted to do was create a show that did that for people in their, you know, late 20s, having existential crisis, being scared about the world, especially queer people, because the world gets more and more terrifying every day for queer people at the moment. So I really wanted to make that show, and I thought the way to do it was to make these puppets and really try and manifest that. So that's what the show is, and it's full of original songs as well. So one of the titles is Don't Be Afraid of Monsters, There Are Much Worse Ways to Die. that's why I started to use them. So I've made all the puppets myself, and it was while I was actually on tour. We were on tour with Sink the Pink, and we were kind of touring over the weekends. We were back in London during the week, and I'm quite an anxious person, and I get stressed if I'm around a lot of people, like on a bus a lot of times. So that was quite stressful for me in those situations. So what I would do is, when we were in whatever town we were in, I would go to the market during the day and get some fur, whatever they had, whatever was fancy or whatever I liked the look of, and then take that back. And during the week, as like my down, like chill out time, I would make a puppet each week. And not particularly like design them, but just kind of let them kind of form in front of me. And it was, I mean, I don't know, it was a really, really special experience, actually. And I think definitely in the future, when my feet eventually completely pack in, that's going to be my job. 100% that's going to be my job.
Wow.
But no, that's how I've ended up with them. So I've got quite a brace of them now. And I'm going to continue to make them while I'm in Edinburgh as well. I'm now making one a month.
Oh, wow.
Because I want to get to the stage where I can do like production numbers with 25 or 30 puppets in, like on The Muppets or Sesame Street.
Well, there's so much in that to unpack that I thought was fascinating. So you've got, I love sort of Sesame Street and I love that kind of...
Who's your favourite puppet?
In Sesame Street. I do like a big bird. I like the ones in Sesame Street who are kind of depressed or grump. Because that's the thing. My characters in Sesame Street are always like, they're all flawed. In a way that's like, that you don't often get. So puppets are often like sort of super positive or something. Whereas in Sesame Street, every character is kind of flawed in a way, but that's what makes them, that's your kind of entry point to them.
I always love the Count. He was my all-time favourite one.
There's a letter of the day section in Happy Place, and the letter of the day is A for arson.
But one, loads of things there. So you were talking about being Punch and Judy man.
Yes.
I love the idea of Punch and Judy.
Punch and Judy is one of the creepiest, weird English things.
Welcome to my
it.
Life.
But also it's interesting that you're a performer, but you're unseen, and you're doing everything, but you're also anonymous. Mm. I find that interesting.
Well, I wasn't anonymous. I was Professor Fizzo, who was my clown character that I was doing at the time. But it was definitely a way of... interesting that you say about anonymous. I think certainly because I was young and shouldn't really, not that I shouldn't have been doing it, but like it's strange to have a child working doing a puppet show as like something that they've decided they're going to do.
Why did you see a creepy Punch and Judy man on Brighton Beach or something?
Well, I've always loved magic, so I started off doing magic tricks and things like that, and then I learned some balloon modelling, and then that's when I started doing the parties, and then I did this big Christmas party once. Thanks for this, because you've brought this, but I've not thought about this for years now. I did this big Christmas party and there was a clown at the party as well as me, and he did a Punch and Judy show at the end. And I don't know, the kind of capitalist deep down inside me somewhere was like, if I learn to do Punch and Judy, I could charge some more money and cut this guy out. Not him directly, but like it was like another thing that I could add on to my thing. So, but getting into it, I mean, the history of it is absolutely amazing. I eventually did it as a job in a theme park for a little while. And that's kind of where it all started. But it means you can put on a show that has 10 characters on your own. You know, that's really thrilling. And they all do what they're told. And I didn't really have a lot of friends when I was a kid because I was quite a strange child. So not to say that the puppets were my friends, more that they just gave me access to more people to mount my spectacular productions.
And also you got to hide in a little box and
This is like, so Happy Place in new show is like a weird mixture of things you were doing when you were a teenager then. It's sort of like a throwback as well as being...
Yeah, well, I've started to try and bring more stuff like that into my shows. You know, I've been doing drag 10 years now, and it takes a long time, I think, because I'm not like a lip syncer, because I'm absolutely not a dancer. So there's no value in me lip syncing a song. I'm just flapping my mouth around someone else's song. You know, there's no value there. So
you're not a puppet.
No, exactly. So because it's more of a character thing that I'm doing, you know, it's more about actually trying to make a connection with people. It's taken a while for me to really feel secure enough in that to start to bring this other stuff in, you know. So, and Happy Place is definitely the leap towards that. Definitely.
And that's how that started as well. I find that quite interesting that you've kind of... So as a kid, you were kind of a performer from what age? From very young?
Well, I think I've always just been a massive attention seeker.
So even when you're doing Punch and Judy, when it does feel slightly more anonymous, you were getting involved in that.
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely. It's, I don't know, you're either born a show-off or you're not, I think. You know, and I think at least, I don't know, I probably had a lot of that show-off energy and I projected it into something that I could actually get applause for at the end. You know, like, I think that's what it was.
And you're talking about sort of... that mixed with this sort of anxiety as well before. Mm. So that's an interesting kind of, that feels like two separate things, right? Mm. Performing and also being anxious and things.
Well, the anxiety kind of came a bit later on in my life, really. And it's part of the reason that I wanted to make a show about that is because where at this time that I was talking about, when I was going through this period, and it was at the time of Hurricane Katrina, a lot of conversations around mental health are very clean and well put together, and I did not identify with that, you know, because my life was a mess. I felt like a mess. I still feel like a mess. I'm a mess that's kind of all tied up in the same bag now, which is good. But, you know, and I couldn't identify with a lot of the conversations about it. So I wanted to make a show specifically with queer themes in it, because they're the people that I talk to. You know, that's a big part of my audience. To talk about how messy it is and be okay with that and laugh at it, you know. It can't all be serious about it all the time, because it's not that serious.
Sure.
You know.
Yeah. I think that's not something I think is unusual. I mean, certainly in the kind of stand-up world, you sort of almost expect people to be bags of nerves and even unacknowledged, lots of unacknowledged people with problems, where you think, I mean, just have a think about it for a minute. But you do have that, lots of people that I guess would be seen as being performers and quite, so I guess they're perceived as being, yeah, like show-offs or big personalities, who are ultimately very kind of shy people often.
Yes.
And that's thing that it doesn't come as a surprise to me at all, but I think it's even more pronounced in sort of a drag world, where everything's so kind of turned up and heightened that you think that, but of course that performer isn't necessarily going to be like that in real life, or if you met them afterwards, or like it.
Just because you can, like, just because you can go out in front of a few thousand people and be a clown doesn't mean you don't like to lie under a blanket and eat trifle the rest of the week. You know, like,
Rod Gilbert did a whole documentary about his shyness.
Right, yeah. So, I think it's quite a sort of typical thing. You're probably more likely to find it in performers than not.
Well,
I suppose
we've all got our damage, haven't we? Yeah. I mean,
if you, what's
not
yours?
Not me.
I think if you choose to make a living by gluing artificial hair to your head and shoving your feet into shoes that are two sizes too small, then there's some damage in the background there.
And does the anxiety?
And you might as well be honest about that.
Does the anxiety ever create a lack of confidence, or is that separate?
Oh my god, yes, absolutely, right. Absolutely. But I mean, partly it's not really me out there, you know.
Right.
And also, if you, I don't know, it's about making a relationship with people, and it doesn't have to always be bright and shiny and happy, you know. I mean,
it feels like a lie.
Well, exactly, you know, exactly that. So I'm not afraid of showing that damage to people, you know, because that's who I am. And if it can help anybody else find any kind of humour in their own damage, then that's great, you know. But it's mainly about me, obviously.
That's it. That's the other thing about performing, where ultimately it is selfish. I always think that when people talk about, like, this sounds almost like a mental healthy thing, but I don't mean it to. But more like, so after this, on a Friday, I often go, I go to my therapist, because that's where I say. But he often talks about things where he'll talk about, when you mention stand-up, he often talks about the audience. And I always go, I don't really care about them. Yeah. I mean, they're sort of like a...
This is not for them.
Yeah, it's not really for them.
No.
I mean, they're there, but
and
it's
that's
not
all right.
Really, yeah.
Because, you know, like, having a car is selfish.
Yeah.
Having children is selfish. No, I'm not kidding.
Yeah, of course, yeah.
Like, the world is overpopulated.
Yeah.
The sky is falling. You know, like, I can be selfish on stage if I want to be, you know? So I that's how I rationalise it with myself. I'm not bothered about that.
Yeah. I mean, I want people to enjoy it.
Yeah.
But it's what ultimately, they're not the arbiters of what you do or you don't. They respond to it or don't.
Yeah.
But it's not. They don't really have an influence on what I do. Or
yeah, and if you'll know, when you run a show for a long time, you can have a night when you go down and you think this is the best show I've ever made in my life, and then you have another night where people cannot stay awake.
Yeah,
like I've had both of those for exactly the same show on nights straight after each other. You know, it goes.
People
like
are people
that,
so. Are people, and I think that thing where you just get in a different bunch of people, and it's just that not everyone, you know, not everyone likes me who I meet. So it's like you just have you'll sometimes have a weird mixture of whatever percentage of the room like you. And
sometimes
it's just
even more thrilling when they don't like you, though.
Yeah.
There's part of me that really enjoys that. You know? There's a challenge there to win them round, almost.
And that's when I really like an audience. I really like having one people round.
Yeah.
I really like when you come out and someone crosses their arms and you go, oh, hello. And then by the end of it, you can check back and see, oh, their arms aren't crossed. I like winning over an audience, but I don't really... I mean,
like
they're just sort of like a mass. They're a mass. They're not really like... I don't think you can think of an audience as being like an individual or like a,
no,
they're just a collection of different people with
also all, they've all come from different places that day, they've come from different jobs or wherever they'd like, whatever's happened to them, you know, it's that kind of that energy that they all bring individually together, and especially if you're working on a show that's where you're performing on your own,
yeah,
you can really go with that sometimes, you know, you can take it somewhere else, or if you're working with people that you work with a lot and you've got a good intuition with each other, it's fun to see what an audience can do to a show.
I mean
I can't wait to see what they're going to do to this one.
So I was going to play your song now, your song is Sharon Jones. I just dropped in to see what condition my condition was in.
Yes.
Sharon Jones. Who's Sharon Jones?
Sharon Jones. It's Sharon Jones and the Dap Kings. Sharon Jones is an amazing soul singer. And I realized on the way here that I don't have the dates specific for this. But she's a soul singer. She had been working and touring for years. She was really, really popular on the gig circuit, but never quite broken through with an album. And then when she did break through with the album, she got very, very ill. She's died now, but this song it really relates to me in connection to the show you'll hear.
Okay, let's play that now.
Fan Club on FUBAR Radio.
So that was Sharon Jones. We're still here with Ginger Johnson. Hello again.
Hiya.
But you have moved positions.
Yes, I have.
Because you will be doing... Oh, Natalie's come in. What's she done? Oh, sorry.
Hello.
Oh.
There I am. There
oh my goodness.
I am.
Do you know what I did stupidly there?
Yes.
I turned up your old microphone. Having said... that you have just moved position. This is my first time running the desk.
Right.
I'm doing a terrible job. But that was Sharon Jones.
Yes.
And you were just saying that's not... I think I assumed it was like a sort of 60s
no,
era.
No, it sounds like it was written and produced in the 60s, but it's not. It's definitely within the last 10 years. I don't know exactly how many. I'm sorry.
That's all right. And what was it about? So it's just... Lyrically, what was the thing that attracted you to it?
Well, I love soul music,
yeah.
And I play the saxophone, so I think that's what really brings me towards it. And also the Dap Kings are an amazing band. They also played with Amy Winehouse, and yeah. They've got a lot of stuff on their own as well. Sharon's just an amazing performer. The voice is unbelievable. It feels like it's kind of crying out to you from the past, you
yes.
know, which is spectacular. That's the music that I kind of grew up around when I was a child. That's what my mum and dad were listening to, like Aretha Franklin and Percy Sledge and that kind of thing. So that's what that's why I love that kind of stuff so much.
I noticed on the screen there, it said you're a fan of toy horses. Is that
yes,
right?
Yes, yes. I've got a collection of plastic horses. That's right. I've got some with me. Would
yes,
you like
please.
To write
them? Yes, please.
Just going to give us a moment. Hang on, they're
ready. I'm a big fan of this suitcase as well.
So, I found the suitcase by the bin this morning.
which glamorous.
Is great. So this is the first one. This is Diane. Diane's from Ipswich, and she works in a Blockbuster Video. I know Blockbuster Video shut down, but she just stayed in there and runs the shop when she's not busy. This is Susan. That's Diane's sister. Susan and Diane live in a static caravan together. They say they're sisters, but I think they're probably lesbians. This is Michael. Michael was once on The One Show. Giving his opinion about the European referendum. And since then he's been in hiding, so probably shouldn't have brought him with me. This one is Ainsley Harriet, not related. He's the largest of all the horses. He's also got terrifying, scary eyes.
Yes, hasn't he?
Who else have we got in here? David came along too.
I quite like David's Simon's fringe.
Yes. Well, David's a little bit avant-garde.
Right.
Yeah. I think he spent a lot of time in France in the 70s and took a lot of acid, probably.
But he's got a kind of Lamal kind of haircut, isn't he?
Yes. He's very shiny as well. That's what
shiny.
I particularly like
he
about David. Anybody else? I would hate to leave anyone out, you know.
There are so many. I mean, I imagine people are picturing
this is Juan
these
Carlos.
As being much smaller than they are. But these horses are...
Oh, yes.
Are huge horses.
Yes, yes. It's what I feed them. I brought a small selection just to show you, but I've got about 35 of them.
Wow. Your flat must be terrifying.
It is absolutely horrifying, yes. It is. That's one of the things I'm a fan of. I've also started recently collecting trophies.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, secondhand trophies.
Oh, that's quite nice.
Yeah, I think there's such a like a power in a trophy and what you would feel at the moment of winning it, and then to
yes.
get to the point where you're dropping it off at Oxfam.
Yes.
Like
yes.
I got a whole slew of about 10 of them, all from the same woman, this disco dancer. And she's got her name written on the bottom and where she won them and all that kind of thing. It's really, really amazing. And I think I might try and convince her to make a show with me where she teaches me how to dance.
Amazing.
That'd so, yeah, I've got the trophies. I've got a big job lot of them recently, which was very exciting. And they've actually made it into the Happy Place show. They're currently on their way to Edinburgh.
Oh, wow.
Yes. The horses are very disappointed that they're not. But I just couldn't afford the accommodation for them. You know, stabling.
Stabling,
yeah.
Yeah,
absolutely.
It's
nightmare.
Already, it's an award-buying show.
if you don't win an award, you've still got your trophies.
Yes,
so you
yes,
always...
hundreds of them. Yeah. You don't wait for somebody else to give you an award. Give yourself an award. I mean, like...
I was always desperate to win a trophy as a kid. And now when I see them in Oxfams and stuff, I still get a thrill. Like, oh, maybe. It's never occurred to me to just buy it.
Yeah, go for it. Give yourself a little ceremony. Play some music. Nice big drum roll. Set off a confetti cannon. Beautiful.
What else have you got in your huge suitcase? What have you brought?
I did bring my agent along.
Oh, yeah.
Just to keep
who's
an eye.
This?
This is him here. But he's not very talkative. So would you like to introduce yourself? He doesn't make a lot of sense.
I think he was my agent once, actually. I think he rings a bell.
And he's a baked potato, obviously. I just brought him along to supervise.
He's got a very good face, though. I do.
Yeah,
I
he's
do
not
like
bad,
him.
Is he? Good eyes. Good eyes. I should show it in the camera. This is the
you
agent.
Should, yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, there he is.
So who's this? Yeah. Who else have you brought here? Who's
This is Philip Seymour Hoffman.
Philip Seymour Hoffman.
He will demand a round of applause when he. When
Do you know what?
Yeah.
Right. I absolutely have this covered.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the stage, Philip Seymour Hoffman. Hello. Hi. Hang on, I need to just get him up to the microphone close enough.
Of course, you won't be able to hear him otherwise.
Hello. Hi. How are you? Are you well?
I'm very well. How are you, Philip?
Yes, I'm all right, thank you. Lovely to be here at FUBAR Radio.
Are you any relation to the actor, Philip Seymour Hoffman?
No relation, no. We just share the name.
Okay. How does equity
We've actually got it on timeshare, but I get it a lot more than he does these days.
He had it for a few years, and then you've basically taken a...
Second hand.
Was there any foul play involved in your acquisition?
How dare you!
I'll be speaking to your puppet council about this. Absolutely not.
And Philip, you're one of the characters. Will you also be in Happy Place?
Yes, I am. I'm one of the happy gang.
Okay.
Yes, Ginger teaches me a very important lesson about monsters under my bed.
Okay.
Yes.
So who are the other characters you all see in Happy Place?
Well, my boyfriend Simon. He's a cat. And we have some, there are the twins, Peek and Boo. They've got one eye each, but together they have 20/20 vision. And also our landlord, Mrs. Bastard.
Philip, I'm sorry. I'm worried that your ear keeps hitting you in the eye. It's making you feel quite uncomfortable.
Philip, sweetheart,
does that hurt at all?
I think he might have been crushed a little bit in the case. He will get on equity, so I think I might have to shut him up for a while. Say goodbye to Philip.
Goodbye,
bye.
Philip.
Bye, thank you.
And all the horses and Philip and the gang are all heading up to Edinburgh.
No, not the horses.
Not the horses,
no,
okay.
No.
You can live without them for a month.
They've got a dressage tournament on the 12th.
Okay.
Yes, in Solihull.
There's a clash.
Yeah, someone will be taking them there instead.
Now you are going to do a special live performance.
Yes, I am, apparently.
Well, I mean, this is the first time I'm running a desk, so I reckon I am more terrified than you are.
Right, okay.
So I think, so I'll be ready. I'll be setting up, and I'm going to be... Would you like to introduce your live
performance? So this is a song from a musical that it was in. It was on Broadway.
Wow, really?
Ealing Broadway, I think that counts.
Okay.
And it was called Flat Pack, the musical. And it's all about the hopes and dreams that we tie up in our material possessions. You know, all that shit you've got in your house makes you feel like a human.
Yes.
It's about that. So I actually played a spinster in the musical, would you believe? And in this scene, I've moved into my new flat. Haven't you know, broken up, and I'm surrounded by all my boxes that I've not unpacked all my stuff because I can't be bothered, and that's where this song comes from.
Okay, so are you ready now?
Yes, I think so. Yes.
Okay. I don't know why I'm clearing my throat. Okay.
That was. Can you go back to the start? You just kind of missed the start a little bit. A couple of seconds off the start. Got to count myself in, you know.
Hang on. Does that then?
I don't know. Have I cocked you up now? Sauce?
You probably cocked me up. If I start now, will it go back to the beginning? No. Is that that? Okay.
This is just what it was like on Broadway.
I know. I mean, this is typical of me. Let's see. Well, this. Oh, do I have to? Joe, I knew this had happened. This is all my fault.
Sorry.
That's all
right.
Okay. Are we ready? Oh, okay.
Look at. Oh, no, here we go. Right, it's fine.
Okay.
It's fine.
Thank you, Ginger. Thank you for putting up for me.
Look at this place. Why isn't it neat? All of me stuff lies around by me feet. Wouldn't you think it was time I bought furniture? Look at this place, it's out of control. How many boxes can one bed sit hold? Looking around, you'd think shit, somebody burgled her. But this house ain't a home, 'cause it's lonely, and I've no one to make it nice for. What's a bed without someone to hold me? That's what aches when I wake on the floor. want to go to the IKEA sale. Walk hand in hand with a man I could marry, picking out pot plants and choosing a new three-piece suite. Wouldn't that be neat? I want to go where the couples go. I want to buy matching bedside tables, his and hers wardrobes to make our love nest complete. We'll dare to dream big, though the pencils are small. We'll dine on dime bars and dodgy meatballs. Wish I could be spending carefree at the IKEA sale. I need a man who's happy to stand while I look at seating. I need a boy that won't get annoyed and always agrees. 'Cause I've got needs, only the Swedes can succeed in meeting. I'd remortgage for more storage, they understand. And we'll build a life from the things that we buy. Take home the boxes and unpack the pieces. He'll get his tool out and I'll keep a hold of the nuts. That's your dick joke for today. All right.
Thank you.
Is it too much to dream that all my surfaces could be wiped clean? Wish I could be acting. Spending carefree. All together, right? At the IKEA sale. Are you ready? At the IKEA. Wait! Thank you. Thank you, everyone. Really kind. Ever so kind. Thank you. I don't think the horses were impressed.
I'm glad there's finally a song about my beloved dime bars.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
I've OD'd on those.
I've lost two teeth to those dime bars.
That was actually incredible. I think because we were in this sort of strange, small, soundproof room, it was actually quite overpowering. I think I'm going to have to recover somewhere. I'm going to have to have an hour off somewhere. That's beautiful. Thank you very much for that.
You're welcome.
What a thing. Now, we're going to play a game now.
Ooh, a game. Right, okay.
This game is called Better or Worse. Well, you have to say whether the next person is better or worse than the person before, based entirely on my own opinion.
Right.
Okay, so you win points.
So where do I fit into this? Oh, I have to guess if you think they're better or worse. Yeah. Oh, Jesus, right, okay.
Okay, I mean, it's pointless and it makes no sense. But so much of this show.
Look around you.
Okay, so let's get the proper music here. Let's see if I can do it. So this is on three, let's see. Wrong one. Fubar Radio.
So good at this, aren't you, sweetheart?
I mean, do you know what? I reckon I'm better than Nick Helm. So, okay, this is the game, beginning with Adam Wujat, Ian Beale from EastEnders.
Right, okay.
Is Adam Ant better or worse than
better,
Adam?
Better!
He is better!
Yes.
Is Ant McPartlin better or worse than Adam Ant?
I'm going to have to do my Geordie job and say he's better.
But I think he is worse. But oh, he's quite a high card.
Fine.
He's quite a high card.
That's racist.
Is Barbara Windsor better or worse than Ant McPartlin?
Barbara Windsor's the best person on the planet.
Okay, she is better.
Right.
Is Barbara Streisand better or worse than Barbara Windsor?
Oh, no, I'll take it back.
Do you take it back? Better or worse?
Barbara Streisand is better than Barbara Windsor. She is.
I think she's worse.
Do you? You know that she's cloned her own dogs? You know that?
Do you know what? She's better then. Is Debbie Harry better or worse than Barbara Streisand?
This is really hard.
I know,
Debbie
it's
Harry
be hard.
Better or worse than Barbara Streisand? I'm going to say worse.
I think she's better.
Do you?
Is Prince Harry better or worse than Debbie Harry?
Worse.
Is Prince better or worse than Prince Harry?
Better!
Better, yes! Is Freddie Prince Jr. better or worse than Prince?
Worse. I don't know who he is.
It's Robert Downey Jr. Better or worse than Freddie Prinze Jr.?
Worse.
Better than Freddie Prinze Jr. Is Cuba Gooding Jr. better or worse than Robert Downey Jr.?
I don't know, but I'd like to see them fight.
And who would win in that fight?
Cuba.
I think Robert Downey Jr. Is better than Cuba Gooding Jr. I think that's a good one. I think that's a good score.
Didn't Robert Downey Jr. do that awful film where he was in blackface?
Did he?
Tropic Thunder.
Oh, Tropic Thunder.
Yeah. Yes, he's a piece of shit human. Absolutely not.
What's that? Six.
That's a high score.
That's great. A pretty good score.
Okay,
so you are. In fact, have you got a six? No. That's it. So that you'll be so better than we've had Lloyd Griffith, Harriet Kemsley, Morgan McGlynn, Last Skeptic, David Trent, and Toby Williams with seven, and Nick DeSemlian had eight. So
listen, if you're about to tell me that I'm butter of the leaderboard, you better very quickly be making up some people's names to go underneath mine, or this is over, and, mate. All right.
But what it is, it's in reverse order, so you've won.
But yes, of course I have. Thank you. It's all right. Come back, horses. It's all right. You don't need to bite.
And thank you very much for joining us.
Thanks for having me. It's been nice to be here.
It's been lovely to have you. And Ginger Johnson's happy place is at the Pleasant Stone.
Yes, 9:40 every night.
9:40 every night at the Edinburgh Festival.
Yes.
What room are you in the Pleasant Stone?
I'm in Tendome.
I know the room. Mm-hmm. I know the room.
Apparently it's very hot.
Oh, yeah.
So I would suggest if you do buy tickets, maybe wear one of those ponchos you get at a theme park.
Oh, yeah.
Because coming to see me in a hot room is like going to SeaWorld and seeing Shamu. Seeing Shamu at SeaWorld, because you're in the splash zone.
I reckon you'll have to have hairspray on your face to keep the makeup on.
Not enough hairspray in the world could keep that face on my face.
But thank you very much for joining us. Go and see Ginger Johnson's Happy Place at the Edinburgh Festival. Thank you very much to Hayley Campbell for joining us.
You're welcome.
And I'm going to play out now with the Walker Brothers. Thank you for joining us.
As the sun goes down, my silent little room is growing dim, and the man next door is saying what a lousy day it's been, and the clock on the wall, I'd like to put its ticking to an end. In the room below, a girl is crying for her guy again. After the lights go out, what will I do? After the lights go out, facing the night.
You've been listening to a FUBAR Radio podcast. For more information, go to FUBARradio.com.